There is a fifth dimension, beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space, and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition. It lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Dimensions, a Twilight Zone podcast. I'm your host, Bill Couch. On tonight's episode, we will be discussing Season 2, Episode 19, titled Mr. Dingle the Strong. This episode was written by Rod Serling, directed by John Brom, produced by Buck Houghton, with music by Marius Constant, Jerry Goldsmith, Bernard Green, Wilbur Hatch, Pierre Henry, Bernard Herrmann, Carlos Savina, and Fred Steiner. In the cast were Burgess Meredith, James Westerfield, and Don Rickles. Its original air date was March 3rd of 1961. You can watch it on Tubi TV, Freevee TV, Paramount Plus, or if you have the DVDs or Blu-rays, you can always watch it there. As always, I recommend the Blu-rays just for the crispness and clearness of sound and picture quality. That being said, if you haven't watched this episode since we landed on the moon, or if you haven't seen it since Jimmy Carter was president, give it a look if you don't want to have spoilers, because there will be spoilers in this episode. So if you haven't seen it since Nixon resigned, go ahead and hit pause on the podcast, go watch the episode, come back, and listen to the rest of the podcast. With that being said, let's go ahead and get into the opening narration. Uniquely American institution known as the Neighborhood Bar. Reading left to right are Mr. Anthony O'Toole, proprietor, who waters his drinks like geraniums, but who stands four square for peace and quiet and for booths for ladies. This is Mr. Joseph J. Callahan, an unregistered bookie, whose entire life is any sporting event with two sides and a set of odds. His idea of a meeting at the summit is any dialogue between a catcher and a pitcher with more than one man on base. And this animated citizen is every anonymous bettor who ever dropped rent money on a horse race, a prize fight, or a floating crap game, and who took out his frustrations and his insolvency on any vulnerable fellow barstool companion within arms and fists' reach. And this is Mr. Luther Dingle, a vacuum cleaner salesman whose volume of business is roughly that of a valet at a hobo convention. He's a consummate failure at almost everything, but is a good listener and has a prominent jaw. And these two unseen gentlemen are visitors from outer space. They're about to alter the destiny of Luther Dingle by leaving him a legacy, the kind you can't hardly find no more. In just a moment, a sad-faced perennial punching bag who missed even the caboose of life's gravy train will take a short constitutional into that most unpredictable region that we refer to as the Twilight Zone. So we get rather a long opening narration from Rod in this episode, and sadly, even seeing Rod Serling narrate for longer than a paragraph couldn't save this episode. This episode is the epitome of the old saying, in every life, a little rain must fall. Which makes me sad, because I love Burgess Meredith. If that man were alive today, he'd be 137 years old, but I'd still give him a hug. You know what I mean? And I love Don Rickles. And I love The Twilight Zone. But this episode is, in my opinion, and of course this is all my opinion, obviously if you disagree with me, you disagree with me, and that's perfectly fine. To some people, this episode is a top five, I'm sure. And to some other people, it might be the worst episode that was ever created in the history of the show. I find it somewhere more toward the latter, but not at the bottom. Which is to say, it's a... it is the TV equivalent of Kraft macaroni and cheese. It's... I don't know how to explain it. It's just, it's... I'd say you have to see it to believe it, but I almost wouldn't subject anyone to that sort of thing. Even though I love Burgess Meredith and I love The Twilight Zone and I love Don Rickles, this episode was just... I hate to say it, it was just a mess, at least in my opinion. If you disagree with me, I would love to hear your opinion. Email me at dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. But this episode was just stylistically and everything else. It was just a muddled mess, in my opinion. Now, that's not to say it's the worst episode. I don't believe it is. But it's certainly not the best. This is in the bottom 50 in for me, probably bottom 20 for me of episodes of this, television show that I love so much and have actually devoted a podcast to, which is sad to say because I love John Brom as a director. He's actually very good. Of course, I love Rod Serling as a writer. I really appreciate Burgess Meredith's ability to be funny, be dramatic, and be everything that you want an actor to be. And I appreciate Don Rickles for his madcap sort of high-energy, manic sort of way that he presents himself in almost every acting role he's ever had, because let's be honest, the man's not really an actor, he's a comedian, but he does, you know, what he does well. But this episode is just a waste of all their talents, and I hate to say that, goodness knows I hate to say that, because I really do like all of those people and all of those people together, including the people we don't see, like Buck Houghton and you know, all the crew. They worked hard to make this episode, and this was the end result, and it makes me sad. But let's get off of my tirade about what I feel about this episode, and let's get to the episode itself. So we have Luther Dingle, Burgess Meredith, a vacuum cleaner salesman door-to-door, which... that was one of those jobs, door-to-door salesman, that they kind of stuck people in television shows, because it was nondescript enough that there was a little bit of freedom to it, but just enough to say you have a job if you were a character in a story. You see that a lot in older television programs, from everything from Andy Griffith to... you know, Twilight Zone, One Step Beyond, you know, you name it, it's been there. I mean, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, there's a couple of episodes with traveling salesmen there, some really good ones. One called Incident in a Small Town, or in a Small Town Jail, something like that. Fantastic episode. Go watch it if you have the chance. Watch it instead of this episode of The Twilight Zone, as a matter of fact. If you're so inclined. But, so we have Mr. Dingle, which, coincidentally, Mr. Dingle was supposed to be the actual last name of the character of Mr. Denton in the episode Mr. Denton on Doomsday in season one, and Rod changed it to Denton instead of Dingle, and kept Dingle for this. And I think we were the better for it. So Mr. Dingle goes into the bar and he goes in to have a drink and to rest because he's been carrying a vacuum cleaner around trying to sell it all day and he's having no luck. And he winds up getting into an argument over a game of baseball where there was supposedly a bad call which cost Don Rickles some money. Of course, over the course of the argument, they try to get Dingle to mediate or declare if it was a bad call or not. And, of course, he makes the not necessarily unwise decision to side against Don Rickles, who punches him out. And as we've already seen, the Martians that came in, which were, even by 1960s standards of Martians, kind of silly looking, and even for the Twilight Zone, you know, because we'll see other aliens in future episodes, one later this season with John Hoyt and Jack Elam, and it's, you know, done better than this episode. But they decide to make an example of Dingle and give him the strength of 300 men. And so Dingle then, not realizing his strength, you know, of course, tears up several things in the bar, goes out and lifts a park bench with a woman sitting on it, lifts a statue, does a couple of other things, comes back to the bar. By this time, he's getting notoriety, and he was going to be interviewed by a TV station. And he breaks a table, lifts a stool out of the ground that's bolted into the ground, and even lifts the building up a little. And the Martians see this, and they basically chastise Dingle for not using his powers to help people or for good, but using them just to further himself and to be an exhibition. And they take the power away from him, and he comes back to be good old Mr. Dingle once again. No longer having the strength of 300 men, now having the strength of just one Dingle. Which isn't enough strength, really, for anything, other than lifting a vacuum and carrying it and trying to sell it. But all is not lost for Dingle, because as the Martians decide to exit stage left, they run into two Venusians who decide to use Mr. Dingle as a subject of an experiment of giving him the intelligence of a superhuman. And the episode ends with the Venusians about to perform the, you know, to see what happens when they perform their little quote-unquote miracle on Dingle. And with that, we get Rod's closing narration. Exit Mr. Luther Dingle, formerly a vacuum cleaner salesman, strongest man on Earth, and now, mental giant. These latter powers will be very likely eliminated before too long, but Mr. Dingle has an appeal to extraterrestrial note-takers, as well as to frustrated and insolvent bet losers. Offhand, I'd say that he was in for a great deal of extremely odd periods, simply because there are so many inhabited planets who send down observers, and also because, of course, Mr. Dingle lives his life with one foot in his mouth and the other in the Twilight Zone. All right, so I suppose it's no I suppose it's no mystery that I don't care for this episode. And that's sad because, you know, I want to like them all. And out of 156, you know, there's got to be a couple of duds in there. Even Serling said so himself that, you know, about a third of them were really good. A third of them were, you know, decent television. And a third of them were just turkeys, he said. He literally said that. And I agree with him. And if a man can't be honest about his own work, can you really take him seriously? But I think what this episode tried to do is it very much tried to be funny, but also be somewhat serious at the same time. And just like a restaurant that offers Chinese food, Italian food, and American food all in one place, they're not going to do any one of all three of them as good as any other restaurant that specializes in only one can do. And that's kind of what we have here. It's sort of a mixed bag between trying to be somewhat serious and trying to be somewhat funny, and basically failing, or at least missing the mark on both of them. Which is sad to say. Again, I love The Twilight Zone. I love John Brom's direction. I love Rod Serling's writing. I love Don Rickles being a madcap genius that he is. Very manic and very, you know, bouncing off the walls. I love Burgess Meredith being Burgess Meredith. It had everything that needed to be in place for a good episode. And in my opinion, it just wasn't. And that makes me sad because I really wanted to like it. And I've seen this episode several times. It's not like I've only seen it a time or two. I've watched this episode since I was a kid. And even as a kid, I was like, something's kind of off on this episode. And it's not the acting, it's not the directing. It's the whole idea. I mean, maybe if the aliens didn't look so corny or so hokey, either one, the Martians or the Venusians, or if there was a better way to do the feats of strength that Burgess Meredith acquired the muscles for, it may have been better, but we're left with what we're left with, and sadly, it just doesn't measure up. It just misses the mark. And we're left with, essentially, a silly, serious episode, which doesn't really work. I mean, if you go back to Mr. Beavis or, you know, some of the other ones that are trying to skirt that line between funny and serious, and some of them kind of pull it off, some of them do better than others, but in the end, this one, I think, is the weakest link of the ones trying to be serious and or silly at the same time. Sadly. But with that, let's get into the bios. So, Burgess Meredith, I already covered in the episode Time Enough at Last in Season 1. So if you want to listen to more about Burgess Meredith, go back to Season 1's Time Enough at Last. It's a good episode. Give it a listen, and you'll learn about Burgess Meredith. Seemed to be loved by all, I can tell you that. You won't really find anyone that has a bad thing to say about that man when he was living or now that he has passed. And he passed several years ago in the 90s. But you won't find anyone to really say a cross word about the man. And I think that says something, especially in the giant machine that is Hollywood. That's quite a feat to have no one be able to say anything bad about you. So with that, let's move over to James Westerfield, who played Mr. O'Toole, the proprietor of the bar that Mr. Dingle was a frequent guest in. So he was played by James Westerfield, who O'Toole was played by James Westerfield, who was born in 1913 and passed away at the age of 58 in 1971. Now, he was born in Nashville, Tennessee, and is known for his parts in movies such as On the Waterfront, True Grit, and Hang 'Em High. He was married to Faye Tracy, who was also an actress. But Mr. Westerfield's career, a lot of it was actually spent on the stage, not only as an actor, but also as a producer, a director, and set designer. And he actually won 2 New York Drama Critics Awards for acting. And usually played tough, blue-collar types, often cops, bartenders, or thugs. He was also known by a lot of Disney film fans. We'll remember him in several of their most popular comedy slapstick movies, such as The Shaggy Dog, The Absent-Minded Professor, and The Son of Flubber, where he played a police officer. But he also did his turn on television programs, such as one episode of The Twilight Zone, Rawhide, Bonanza, Maverick, if I've named it before with any other actors, he's been in it as well. Sadly, passed away at the age of 58 in 1971 from a heart attack. Now, the bookmaker, Mr. Joseph J. Callahan, was played by Eddie Ryder. He was born in 1923 in New York and passed away at the age of 74 in 1997. He has 122 credits to his IMDb, with his last role being in 20 episodes of General Hospital from the years of 1981 to 1991, but before then he was in episodes of pretty much any television program you can think of, from Barnaby Jones to Beretta to The Rockford Files to The Waltons to Gunsmoke, The Mod Squad, one episode of The Twilight Zone, of course, Ironside, That Girl, Get Smart, The Lucy Show. I mean, you name it, he's probably been on it. And he was also a writer and director as well, so he had a fairly long, but if not necessarily well-known, career, and spent a lot of his time writing and directing behind the camera rather than bit parts in one-offs of episodes of television shows. And at the age of 74, passed away in 1997. And lastly, but not leastly, just for fun, the better, the betting man who punched out Mr. Dingle was played by none other than Mr. Warmth himself, Don Rickles. Don was born in 1926 in New York and passed away at the age of 90 in 2017. He started his career as a stand-up comedian, where he worked on his craft for give or take 20 years until the mid to late 1950s, where he was in Las Vegas telling jokes and he caught the eye of none other than Old Blue Eyes himself, Mr. Frank Sinatra. The two became pals right about the time Rickles' career started taking off, where he debuted in the 1958 movie Run Silent, Run Deep, which was a big hit. Afterwards, he kept doing, after the success of the movie, he still did his stand-up, which he continued throughout the rest of his life, but he would also act on the side, starring in films such as X, The Man with X-Ray Eyes in 1963, Bikini Beach in 1964, Enter Laughing in 1967, and Kelly's Heroes in 1970. In 1973, he became a regular on the television. It wasn't really a serial. It was sort of like a series of one-offs that wasn't really like a season or anything, but it was the Dean Martin Celebrity Roasts, where he excelled at making fun of literally everyone and anyone in the audience or on the dais. In 1976, CBS gave him his own show, CPO Sharky, which ran for 2 years. And after that show ended, he pretty much didn't do much TV or movies after that. He pretty much focused on his stand-up act, which he still did well through the 80s and into the 90s. And he made his way back into film roles in 1995, starring as Mr. Potato Head in Toy Story 1 and 2, as well as appearing in the movie Dirty Work with the best comics comic ever known to man, Mr. Norm Macdonald. This gave him a little bit of a boost to his career and no doubt helped his longevity to live another, you know, about 20 years, where he passed away in 2017 at the age of 90. So with that, let's move on to trivia for this episode. Now, in this episode, and much like a lot of episodes in this season, the majority of actors are smoking due to the demand of one of the sponsors, which was a cigarette company. The phone book that Dingle rips in half is the June 1960 edition of the Los Angeles Telephone Directory. This was Douglas Spencer's final acting role before his death on October 6th, 1960, at the age of 50. Douglas Spencer played one of the Martians. Rod Serling had previously used the name Mr. Dingle for the main character in Mr. Denton on Doomsday, but changed it to Denton. I believe I already told you that. The street where Dingle throws the football is the same street from The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, which, if you're a trained noticer in the Twilight Zone, you probably picked up on that. If you didn't, watch it again, and you'll see it's the same street that that Steve Brand and then Charlie and them were living on, and when he and Charlie were going to go downtown, you see that same basic shot of that street. The man trying to get Mr. Dingle to appear on TV compares Dingle to every Tom, Dick, and Harry. Burgess Meredith played Harry in the movie Tom, Dick, and Harry in 1941. Near the end, the bartender said that business had not been this good since the repeal of the 18th Amendment, ratified in 1919. The 18th Amendment instituted prohibition. It was repealed in 1933, 28 years before the original airing of this episode. And lastly but not leastly, Michael Fox, who played the second Martian, later played Tom Carter in Examination Day and A Message from Charity in the 1985 revival of The Twilight Zone. Now, let's get to the goofs of this episode. Neither the television camera nor the TV host's microphone are plugged into anything. A close-up shot of the man Dingle is lifting over his head shows part of the lifter's face, revealing that an actor other than Burgess Meredith, of course a stunt person, was used here. If one looks at the head of the man Dingle lifts over his head, is actually a dummy. Before Dingle tries to lift the building, A crack can already be seen in the ceiling beam. Dingle's boulder that he lifts and places on the ground sounds with a light tap. No matter how strong someone picking it up and putting it down, a dull thud should be heard instead of just a tap. The sound of the table breaking begins before Mr. Dingle hits it. Even if someone was strong enough to lift a building, it would crumble rather than maintain its integrity. Additionally, it would be physically impossible to lift it from the inside, of course, because it has a foundation. When Mr. Dingle rips the bar stool out of the floor, you can clearly see the strings before, during, and after him doing so. The alarm clock continues to ring for just a split second after Dingle smashes it. When Dingle is looking in the mirror in his apartment, just as the scene ends, you can see the shadow of the camera in the mirror. When Dingle lifts up the bedder, wires can be seen suspending the man, i.e. Don Rickles. When Dingle lifts the park bench, and also when he lifts the statue, the wires lifting it can be seen. So, of course, again, you got to remember, it's 1961, and you're watching this on a 13 to 15 inch black and white television, sitting far and away from it so you don't get radiation poisoning like your parents would tell you if you would sit too close to the television. So, obviously, you wouldn't see the wires lifting everyone up. Now for the likes and dislikes. Well, I think we've pretty much covered that, haven't we? I like John Brom. I like his directing. I love Burgess Meredith. I love Don Rickles. They're all great people. Great talents. Rod Serling as well. Great talent. Great people. But this one just didn't hit the mark. It just didn't hit the mark. As much as you'd want it to, and as much as Burgess Meredith and the episodes that he was in, like Time Enough at Last, or The Printer's Devil, or Obsolete Man, are giants in the realm of Twilight Zone, in the pantheon of the Twilight Zone. This episode is by far his worst. It's the low point in the Burgess Meredith Twilight Zone career. So, sadly, we get this episode, which, like I said, I love the people. I love the way it, you know, the idea could have been done a lot better. Sadly, it wasn't. And this is what we get. Now, if you disagree with me, I would love to hear from anybody that loves this episode. I want to hear why you love it, and I don't care if it's because you watched it when you were 7 years old and you loved it then and you love it now because of that. I want to hear about it. I want to know why. I want to know why you love it. Tell me why you love it. Write me at dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear why you love it. I don't care if it's nostalgic. I don't care if you think it's the best technically done Twilight Zone episode you've ever seen. Tell me why you love it. I would love to hear it. I would absolutely love to hear it. I am super interested into why you may like this episode of The Twilight Zone. And I'm not saying that because I say it's not great that you should, you know, that I'm wrong or I'm right. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's subjective. I'm saying I don't care for it. If you love it, tell me why. I really want to know. I really do. And with that being said, let's move to the casting for this episode. So for Luther Dingle, I would go with Mr. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Rick Moranis, Canada's favorite son. Rick Moranis would be great in that role. For the bartender, proprietor, O'Toole, I would go with a big actor in a small role, Gary Oldman. And for the Bettor, just known as Bettor, the Don Rickles degenerate gambler, I would go with Mr. Ricky Gervais, because he is also a stand-up comedian. He is also very funny, and he is also very witty and very, he can roast people very well, as anyone who has ever seen him hosting the Golden Globes can testify. He's quite good at that. And I think he'd be good in this. And so with that, let's move on to the moral or philosophy of this episode. And I think it's fairly obvious, at least it was to me. And maybe I missed the mark, maybe I'm off base, but to me it's about everyone having a talent and what you do with that talent. You could say it's a God-given talent, or if you don't believe in God, you can at least appreciate the fact that your DNA makeup, your nature and your nurture, and the way you were raised and everything else has caused you to be better at some things than other people, be it anything from drawing and painting to stand-up comedy to basketball, baseball, football, hockey, track and field, piano, you name it. You're better than a lot of people at something. You may not know it, and you may not know it now, or you may not discover it until you're 40 or 50, or you may discover it when you're 16. But everyone's got a talent. And the idea of this episode is that when you have a talent that has been given to you, not to squander it, but to nurture it and to do good things with it. And I think ultimately that's what the bright spot of this episode is the idea that this episode teaches us that if you have something that you're good at, if you have something that you excel at over other people, you should always use your talents for good. Always use it to help other people or to be an example for other people and set the bar. And I think that's really what this is about. And I might be wrong, and I might be right. I don't know. Tell me at dimensionstzpodcast.com. Write to me and let me know. I'd love to hear your thoughts. But with that, and I know this is going to be a somewhat shorter episode, but that's fine. I think we can safely bring this episode in for a nice soft landing. And if you would, stay tuned for next week's episode, one of my personal favorites. One of the episodes, episode number 5 of 6, shot on videotape. Get ready for a man that travels back in time via an old radio in season 2, episode 20's Static. So stay tuned for that. Thank you everyone for listening. I truly appreciate you, and I hope you have a good week. Good night, everybody.